Hi, everyone. This is Jill Ajeezy. Thank you for being here tonight. I'm so excited to have such wonderful guests tonight. We are going to have a really incredible show. I wanted to start out by saying first about our radio station. We have some terrific things on syndicated news coming up, specifically Lowry Leaks, which is Richard Lowry, Pulitzer Prize nominee from 2011. And he is going to be the guest speaker at the Navy League in Jacksonville Naval Air Station Officers Club, talking about his book, New Dawn, Battle of Fallujah. And if you want to attend, you can certainly get there, and you have to RSVP, and the number is 904-425-5691. Michelle, how are you tonight?
I'm fine. Can you hear me okay? It just dropped off, I think.
I can hear you perfectly. I lost you for a second, but I'm glad to have you back because I could not do this without you because you are my sidekick and I'm your sidekick and we're stuck together like super glue.
That's so true. That is true, and I'm glad you said that.
It's for sure. I had a great comment today. I saw someone posted on Facebook, my secretary brought to me, that they had just found The Good Karma Divorce, and what an incredible book that it was. Of course, your book, The Good Karma Divorce, about how to have a sensible, level-headed divorce and how not to beat yourself up and just make it a horrible experience.
Well, it's in your hands. It is a horrible experience. But what you make of it, we have a lot more power than we ever imagined. Well, we think we have the power till we get involved in the process. And then we get involved in the process, little day by day we start feeling disempowered because we are caught in the cycle of a combative system. But it doesn't have to be that way. But you're not really telling everybody what the real email said, which was that you can get the book for half price on half.com, which I love. And, you know, even before my book came out, it was being sold used on eBay. That's
the
truth.
Yeah, me too. And you know, I have people call me every day and say, I would like to write a book. And I said, then you better save up everything you have and sell all of your furniture, because you and I know, even if you get a contract with a big publishing company, that it costs you money to write a book, doesn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, maybe we're lucky that we're just in time, because the publishing world now is so impossible. It's one difficult story, unless you're, you know, Scott Turow or somebody like that. But
right.
I think even for them, because of Kindle and because of all the borders closing, I think it's all, we were lucky.
Yeah,
as lucky,
I think we
as,
were
as
too.
Much as it did cost us. Anyway.
Thank you, God, for what God has given us is terrific, and Buddha in your case. So I don't want to belabor this point, but we need to move on because we have, of course, some terrific guests tonight, as we always have, but tonight is extra special. Tonight is the night that we are going to hear from two brave, articulate, intelligent young women who, Adeline Cook, who we've had on our show before with her mother, Jenny Dager, and tonight, Addie's sister, Grace, is on with us. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
And we know Addie from the conference that we put on.
Absolutely. We showed her DVD in our conference. But I'm going to give a little history. Jenny was an alienated mother. She has three daughters. She lives in Indiana and heads up the Indiana chapter of Parental Alienation Awareness Organization. And I'm so proud of her for what she's doing there. Addie, 17 years old, decided of her own volition to come back to her mother after several years of alienation. She had two sisters left in the alienator's home, and Grace, who is now 15, has also decided to come back to her mother, and that is so exciting. But there are so many broken-hearted parents out there who want to know tonight how that happens and what are the inner workings of an alienated child's mind that make them decide they want to come back to their mother. So you girls are jewels in the parental alienation world because this doesn't happen very often. And I am so excited that you're with us tonight. And I know it's Addie's birthday, and she's spending her birthday with us to create awareness. And happy birthday, Addie.
Thank you.
She's 18, actually, today.
Oh, she's 18 today. My goodness. You can vote. Aren't you excited, Addie?
Oh, yes.
What a privilege to be able to vote and change this horrible thing that we have going on right now. So you be sure you vote next time there is an opportunity for you to do that. But I wanted to talk about, I don't want to take the focus off you, Eddie, but Grace is here tonight to tell us a little bit about her. But I wanted to say about Grace, Grace is such a talented songwriter and singer. And Grace, we have a special surprise for you tonight. I wanted to introduce you, Grace, to John McEwen, who's on the phone with us right now. And all of you who are listening will know that John is, of course, the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. He's extremely famous and has scored hundreds of films and done all kinds of great things in the music industry. John, welcome.
Hello. Nice to meet you all.
Nice to meet you. Welcome, too. This is Michelle.
Hi, John. And
change the hundreds to dozens.
Oh, okay, dozens.
I know, but we're a show, we like to exaggerate.
We like to exaggerate.
When we do the introductions.
If you're talking about children in this problem, there is no hyping because the children will see the clear picture quicker than most of the adults realize. And to me, one of the things that the adults don't realize is that.
You're well said.
You're right, John. You're absolutely right. And you have done such a great thing with Syndicated News coming on board. Of course, you own part of the station and with Ruthie DiTucci, and you guys are just developing us into the best thing ever. And I'm so proud of what you and Ruthie are doing. Thank you for that.
That's nice of you to say, but the thing I'm concerned most about is Addie and the fact that she's found an avenue to talk about how difficult it is and the whole kid thing with the parents, because any questions she may have, I've raised six kids. I went through a divorce after 18 years, and it came close to parental alienation with either the parent aspiring to do that but the other parent. But then she was a good mother and at heart, but there were things that were very tough on the kids. There's also things where kids sometimes are so smart they can play one parent against, well, when I go over to Dad's house, I don't have to do that. When I'm at Mom's house, I don't have to do that. And it'll be interesting to hear Addie's feeling about why she's with her mother.
Addie and Grace, and I know you've heard Grace's music, John, and you were going to kind of give her some words of encouragement tonight, and that was a surprise to her. So what do you have to say about the talent that this young woman has?
Well, Addie and Grace, keep in mind that everything you're going through in life, you can either benefit from or tell yourself is going to bring you down. And it sounds like the songwriter is going to benefit from whatever angst and difficulties that has. And, yeah, the best way to get back at people is to make money from what they did to you.
Living well is the best revenge.
And, that could be part of it. But take that and be strengthened by it. Never forget that I don't think a kid should ever forget that they need to be grateful that they have a father and a mother if they're enjoying any aspect of life. The reason the parents get divorced is not because of the kids. It's just they didn't get along after a while. And then ego gets in the way and all that. But if I was going to give advice to parents, if the parents can both just support and treat the kids like people and let them know how proud they are of them and not make comments about the other parent, it's done, and now it's your turn, kid, whoever, whatever age you are. You might be 15, 19, or 30, because it's also difficult for people 30 years old when their parents get divorced. But what advice I have to any young songwriter is write down this book title, Songwriter's Guide to Music Publishing, written by Randy Poe. It's called The Songwriter's Guide to Music Publishing, because music publishing rights and music rights are basically the real estate of the music industry. And people like Eminem learned that. From his 8 Mile background, he got smart enough and said, I mean, Grace, are you there?
Yeah.
Have you seen 8 Mile?
No, I haven't.
You need to go see 8 Mile, the Eminem movie. I mean, I my kids drug me to it, but I listen to my kids because I've learned a lot from them. Every time I listen. I would learn something from them. It didn't matter if they're 9 years old or 15 or 20. But I went to see 8 Mile and realized now there is a tough life. It's a very positive movie about a guy that had basically a semi-hooker mother living in a trailer, and he came out of it, and he did it on his own, because that's who you have to count on, Grace, is you. Anyway, somebody else talk for a minute. Sorry.
Well, I think that's terrific advice. You have to count on you.
Well, I want to ask you just a question. Since so much beautiful novels and writing and song lyric and poetry come out of the place of pain, why do you suppose that is? So, I bet you have a theory on that. So
I
that
think it's because
when Grace is feeling really bad, that may be the best time to write.
It's a great way to get rid of things, being your own psychotherapist. It's just like taking care of your body. If you feed it and take care of it, illnesses will have trouble living there. If you take care of your mind and give it exercise and things to do, rather than dwelling on negative, 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 then it will grow, and that is your responsibility. You look to others for inspiration. Grace, do you know who wrote for the? You know, are you familiar with the movie Frankenstein?
Kinda.
Well, a girl named Shelley was 17 years old when she wrote this book that had been turned into 50 different movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was 17. Grace, keep in mind that you're a young woman. You're not a kid. I think kids quit being kids around 12 years old. They just don't tell anybody, you know. And they start doing things. Like the kid that's a doctor now, he was cutting up frogs when he was 14 or 15. My son, who's a great guitar player, he was eating it up at 13 and 14 years old, and that's why he's able to do it now. So you're at the age where you can make your own run and take every influence you've had, and you can write about sad things or happy things. And just realize you're lucky to have that outlet. And your sister, Addie, might be able to help with that or have her own viewpoint.
And, John, wouldn't you say that some of the most painful things that you've written about have been your most successful songs?
Well, for the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, a lot of the music is happy music. It's like Fishing in the Dark, which is a big number one dance song, and people from 10 to 75 like it. If they're over 75, they have trouble getting up to dance, but they still want to.
Yeah.
Mr. Bojangles was about a guy that was in jail, and it was written by a 19-year-old, Grace, one of the most popular songs. In fact, our recording of that was put in the Grammy Hall of Fame last year. And it was written by a man that became a friend of ours when he was 19 in jail with a guy that thought he was a famous dancer, Mr. Bojangles.
Mm-hmm.
If that kid hadn't been put in jail, let's just say he was put in jail and he goes, oh, man, this is really a bummer and I'm not going to do anything. He didn't go that route. He went, wow, there's a song here. They bought him a house in Austin,
yeah.
A really nice one, too.
Good story.
Well, John, I thank you so much for calling to give Addie encouragement and Grace encouragement for what they're going to go through and what they've been through and what you've gone through, because you have so much knowledge at your age and you've been through so much, and we appreciate you just taking the time.
Can I ask
tonight.
One question?
Sure.
I'm going to ask one logistic question sort of on behalf of Grace. How does she, do you journal, I mean, John, how does she store her feelings for future use, for future songs?
Most people I know that do this will have boxes of scraps of paper of things they wrote when they were 9 or 12 or 15 and write it down anywhere. The song The Gambler was written by a friend of mine on a napkin. It just poured out of them. Let's see, you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. Know when to walk away. Know when to, you know, may not even be the songwriter. You might just be lucky enough to be channeling a certain emotion that you've been put into.
Mm-hmm.
And don't worry about what somebody thinks about it.
Does she have to worry about the rhythm or just get words down?
Some people say, what comes first, the words or the lyrics?
Yeah.
Well, lyrics tend to be lyrical, and words tend to say something. Sometimes Bob Dylan's words were more words than lyrical. You just put anything down. Start with a chord. When yesterday the Beatles song started, the actual phrase that they had there was scrambled eggs, because they didn't know what to put there. They just had the melody.
Uh-huh.
Da 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 da. You know, and Grace, how long have you been playing?
Well, I've been singing since I was 2. I kind of picked up the guitar and not really knowing how to play it when I was in about 6th or 7th grade. So what you said about just writing things down, that's kind of what I do. If I have something somewhere to write something down, like I do, and I'm a Facebooker, so if I feel something, I usually put it as a status and then go back and then write it down later and put it in a song. That's kind of how I work, so.
Well, that's anything that makes you productive is a good thing to do. I wouldn't recommend putting some difficult-to-come-by lyrics on Facebook and having somebody else find them, because the only thing that makes money in the music business or show business is ideas, good ideas. And ideas are very hard to come by. So be careful, because what you're doing may not seem valuable to you now, but you may be expressing a feeling. Do you know anybody in a similar situation that you're in?
Not exactly.
Do you think there are others?
I'm sure there are.
There's probably about 2 million others that are in a very similar situation to you and don't know what to do about it.
Right.
And you could be speaking to them in a way that I couldn't, because I'm older, and in the way that that parents can't. You have a magic time in your life, and you can take a hold of it.
And that's really why we're here tonight, to hear about the experience of Grace and Addie, and let parents all over the country, John, who have broken hearts from not seeing their children, like me, like Jenny, their mother who's on the phone, once was, to understand the thought process that went into their coming home to their alienated mother and why they made that decision.
I would make an advice. Can I make a comment for those parents?
Sure.
Do not forget your own esteem, that you did give birth or create some wonderful kids that you care very much about. And if you seem weak or sad or depressed, then that's not going to do the kid any good. Anytime the kid's around, that should be the best day of your week or month or life. And when they're not around, send them a videotape of, well, here's where I was working today. I was in Minneapolis. I used to send my kids videotapes of me on my band bus or on the beach. Or I'd send them shells from Atlantic City or sand from New Mexico, anything. And
I love
They loved it. My daughter to this day probably has 200 bars of soap from hotels all over the country.
I love that, because then they know they're so in the loop of where you are, especially going through a divorce when, you know, the younger ones can't even visualize whatever happened to mommy or daddy.
The other thing
no
is yeah, the younger ones that are that. It's a different space. Below 10 years old is quite often a different space, I will say.
And you guys in theory are terrific, but there's those parents like myself who have no idea where to send anything. Or sometimes
that's
parents don't even know where to call. So we're talking about a whole nother, you know, a whole nother level of parenting, so to speak, because we don't know where to send gifts or shells or anything that we have that we want them to know about. I mean, I have relics here that belong to my daughter and son's grandmother, and I would love to be able to give those things,
I can't. There's justifiable reasons for contact with the previous people in your life, with your offspring, and it's medical. They have to know what your medical history is. They don't know if you're going to. If you have peripheral neuropathy, they need to know about it. If you have breast cancer or heart attack prone, they need to know about it. If you're a certain blood type that might pass, you know. So I'm sorry for you, because I know what that can be like, the separation. I kind of know what it can be like. I cannot really know. But I understand, I think. Then I would say you do what you've probably done whatever you can.
Yeah, you try.
Find them on Facebook.
Well, you know what would
Google.
Be interesting to start? I would love to know from Addie or Grace,
good.
During the time when they were estranged from your mom, Jenny, what would you have thought about presents attempting to be delivered? And would you, even if you had to reject them, would you have liked your parents to keep trying? Could you both tell us where you weigh in on that?
Yeah, I definitely want each of you to comment on that. Addie, you want to go first?
You mean if my mom were to send me presents when I was living with my dad?
Right.
Well, if I were listening to everything that my dad were saying, I would have just thought that it was annoying to get presents from my mom. Like, I would get annoyed with her sometimes when she would call, and I would talk to her and stuff, and a lot of times I hung up on her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure why, but, I mean, I didn't really appreciate anything as much as I do now.
And Grace?
I'm sure as a child, I'd accept the presents, but I wouldn't acknowledge the fact that it meant something more to my mom. Like, she was, you know, just trying to be a good mother, you know, the whole point in sending a present. I would just be like, you know, oh, a present, you know, that's cool, but then never really acknowledge something like that it came from her.
The acknowledgement isn't what I was looking for, and I didn't think of it as presents necessarily. It's sometimes it was just junk. Once I sent the egg sack of a sea turtle that had floated up on the beach. I knew when they opened it, it would be a smell they'd never forget.
I almost am not going to be able to forget it.
It was about 5 feet long. But the other thing that I would do for parents that may be listening, I'd send things that they weren't necessarily presents, but things that they would use. It's winter. Well, here's another snow hat, or here's a pair of gloves. Every time they put those gloves on or use that pen or whatever, they go, oh, this is the pen Dad sent me, or this is the, oh, let me get the sweater Dad sent me, you know, whatever. Something like that was contributing to their life, not just another teddy bear. Although one
Addie and
good.
Grace, I want to take you back. Let's go back to when this kind of all started, and that's a long time ago. But I want to walk through the thought process that you had. Can you remember all the way back to when your mom wasn't there anymore and how the alienation started and how you felt about not having your mom? Let's talk about that first. What were the feelings that both of you felt about the attachment that you had with your mom and then she wasn't there anymore?
Tough question.
Yeah.
Take your time.
You don't have to answer, either Grace or you.
I don't know how to answer that.
Okay, Addie, Grace, do you have an answer?
That's actually, I was kind of on the same page as Addie with that one.
Okay. Okay.
I think that kids at a young age don't really formulate a reason or a thing. It's just what's happening. They still have to get up and go to school, and they still want to see whatever the current Justin Bieber is. Parents in that situation, life is just going on. A kid, if the parent can understand that a kid's natural tendency is to care about himself the most, it helps.
Then let's go to the next step. So years without your mom, and then you make the decision, Addie, because you came first. How did you come after wrestling with all of this hatred and what you were feeling? You know, you had to choose who you were going to love. You wanted to see your mom, but you felt conflicted about that. So how did you make the decision to contact your mom and say, I want to come and see you. I want to be with you.
It really happened after there was like a domestic situation at my father's mm-hmm. house. And mm-hmm. I called my mom up and I told her that I wanted to come stay with her for a few days. And that just made the entire situation worse because my dad got extremely angry with me. And
at what age?
This was a year ago. So I was only 16, yeah, because it was spring break a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then you called your mom and said you wanted to come and stay, and you did it sort of a little bit at a time. So you came for a weekend?
Yeah, I was supposed to stay for only a few days, but things just escalated with my dad, and he was very mad at me, and he would leave messages on my cell phone, and he told me I wasn't welcome in his home anymore, and so then I just kind of stopped talking to my dad because he went back and forth from sending me text messages saying that he loves me and he always will, and then the next day he'd say that I wasn't welcome in his home and I make wrong decisions and my mom is trying to put ideas into my head.
That's a tough position, Addie. You're a strong kid, a person to deal with that. One thing that I think is important is for parents to realize that children are supposed to love both parents and be allowed to. If she was a stockbroker or a school teacher or a bus driver, it doesn't matter. And if your dad is going through, it's what their life is going through, and it's not your life. You have to make your own life.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the first things of, you know, the first character assassination that goes on, that is generally with a woman. The children are told they were, you know, promiscuous or they have been having multiple affairs. I mean, things like that happen, John. So when you say that, it is a little, you know, it follows the whole parental alienation playbook. And that's one of the things that happens. So, Grace, I want to talk to you. Addie was with your mom for a year, and things started to happen. The same kinds of things started to happen for you that happened to Addie. And so let's kind of walk through how you made the decision to call your mom and say, look, I need to see you.
Well, I've always kind of had in mind moving out with my mom. I mean, she's my mom, and, like, even at that point in my life when I kept her totally alienated, you know, there was still a part of me that said, you know what's wrong with me? She's my mom. But sometimes there would just be those times that, you know, me and my dad, we'd sit down and I'd talk about it with him, and, you know, then I just didn't think he was really encouraging me to move out with my mom, but that's okay. I mean, I always knew it was kind of my choice, but a similar situation had happened with me and my dad, like what happened with Addie and my dad, and, you know, I just think that a little time away, not alienating myself from my dad, but a little time away from him isn't going to hurt anybody. You know, and I think it's just better. And at first, when I started first coming back to my mom's, you know, I there wasn't really a lot of me that wanted to be away, you know, but I did eventually start coming back around Christmas of
last year,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just realized, you know, it's not so bad. You know, me and my mom, we've had our rocky past, but you know, I'm gonna, like, there's no reason I shouldn't forgive her. She's my mom, you know. They're like, and I've said and done some things to her, and, you know, she's gonna love me no matter what, unconditionally. And I just, you know, I kind of had my eyes open and realized that there's nothing bad here and nobody's out to get me.
So we interviewed Dr. Childress. We interviewed him a couple times, Grace. And his position, he was maintaining that no matter what's going on with the alienation, deep down, the child still loves the parent.
Absolutely.
Even if they're not, would you agree with that?
Yeah, of course.
Michelle's saying is so important, because you still loved your mom the whole time, no matter what your dad was putting forth, no matter what revisionist history he presented to you, as he rewrote your childhood for you, telling you different things about your mom. What I think is so important is to get into both of your heads and understand what you were thinking when you were hearing that your mother was this or that. What were you thinking when you were being told that?
It was difficult to believe a lot of the things that he was saying about our mom, just because of how bizarre they were. But at the same time, I personally wanted to believe them because my dad had convinced me that our mom was this bad person. And just, like, I would create the situation when I would come over to her house and be with my mom. I would act like everything was just as bad as my dad was making it out to be. I think that's exactly what he wanted.
So when you went to your mom's, you were disrespectful and you were rude and you were all of the things that your dad wanted you to be when you went there to make it uncomfortable for her.
Yes, and I distanced myself from her. I didn't open up to her like a daughter should with her mother.
Addie, same question. What were you feeling when your dad was saying all of those things that weren't true about your mom? How were you feeling about her then?
That was Addie.
Oh, that was Addie. Grace, I told you two to change your voices. Grace, tell me how you were feeling.
There was never really a time when I didn't believe in what my dad said. I always believe every awful thing, like, he would say, you know, and there were some good things he'd say about my mom, you know, and about their marriage, but I would believe everything, and I was probably the most belligerent child out of, you know, any of us, and I would act up a lot and really, really distance myself from my mom, and I, you know, recently, in this past year, is the most I've ever opened up to her, and I've really started opening up to her. And but yeah, that's I really didn't listen to anything my mom would have to say, but I would listen to my dad.
Well, now I want to ask you it's a little bit complicated question, but really important for parents to hear your opinion, because I get these cases in my courtroom all the time. And sometimes the targeted, you know, in this case would be your mom, sometimes parents act really badly because they're so angry. And they say the best thing that an alienated parent can do is not become the person that they're being depicted as. What advice would you give to parents who are being wrongfully maligned? Would you reinforce that they shouldn't get angry and yell, and certainly they're frustrated with their children? How should they be if you were in charge of the world? What would have made it better for you?
Well, it would be great not to hear negative things out of either parent at all. Like, it would be a blessing, you know. If I, even though I agreed with a lot of what my dad said, and I listened to him, you know, it was still kind of sickening to hear him talk about my mom. Even though I was alienating myself away from her, I still, deep down, I really loved her, and there was a part of me that wanted to be with her. And as much as I denied that then, you know, I knew it was true, and I may have said things like, you know, I hate you, Mom, and like, but I really didn't feel that way. It was just that anger. Me finding out all these awful things about her that may not even be true, you know, because, you know, most of the time he could be saying things that aren't true. I don't know. I know I believed them. So.
Well, let me put it this way. What did she do right during this difficult, conflicted time that made it okay for that call for you to make when you made
it? Good question.
I think that, for me, this is Addie talking now, just so you know, Jill.
Yes, thank you, Addie.
For me, it was great to see my mom, like, open up and show me who she really is. And, like, not a way to prove my dad wrong, but I guess it really was. I mean, to show me that those things that he was saying weren't true. Because my dad would go back and he would say things that my mom did when she was pregnant with some of, like, my sisters and I. He would say some really awful things. And, I mean, just seeing the way that my mom is now and her personality, I know that she wouldn't ever do things like that because she's a great mom and she cooks nice meals for us every single day and she runs me back and forth to soccer practice, and she really is a good mom. And I think it's important for the alienated parent to show their child who they are and that they really do care about them and to not give up and keep trying.
It's really important for these parents to realize every bad thing they sling at the other parent is going to bite them in a while.
Yes.
It's they're not doing any good. You have to let the kids find, if that parent is a bad parent, they have to find out on their own. It's the same thing that happens, I don't want you hanging around with those ragtag friends of yours. They have to figure that out themselves. And when they do, you cannot hate half of what created somebody without having a detrimental effect on them.
Well, when you turn
you
a child
tell somebody,
against...
You know, you can't tell a kid there's something wrong with the other half that created you. Then the kid is going to internalize that, there's something wrong with me.
When you turn a child against a parent, you essentially turn a child against himself. Because that
tough...
half of them is lost.
Addie and Grace, I want to compliment both of you on how well you speak and your bravery in doing so.
Aw.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Grace, can you answer the question Michelle asked Addie? I want you to answer that. What did your mom do right that made you make the decision to come back? What was she doing all along that made you think that, yeah, I want to get back there? I want to see my mom.
Well, there's nothing really specifically. She's just been here the whole time with arms wide open, ready for us to come back, you know. And that's great because if it felt like she was giving up and not really trying to get any of us back in her life, it wouldn't be as encouraging, but I know that I've always had her there, and I know she's always going to be there no matter what. So that
how
really
did you know that? What did she do to let you know that?
So other parents might know.
She would call. She calls, and she just tries to keep in contact, and she wants to be a part of my life. And as much as like I didn't want her to be, she would just try. And I, no matter how much I rejected her, I still knew deep down inside, you know, that's great that mom wants to be a part of my life.
So she never, or pretty much never said, how could you do this? We were so close. She didn't put guilt, you know, a lot of parents want to say, what happened to us?
Well, you know, there was those conversations, and it was me saying, like, you know what you did, when I really didn't even know, you know. It was just one of those kind of things. I think, honestly, for me, it was really all in time. And it just, you know, it took a lot of thinking. And it's a really hard to explain. It's a really hard feeling.
And, you know, Jill and I have sort of a mantra, which is kind of the mantra of this show, really. And I'd like to know how it resonates for both of you. And what we kind of say to parents who don't have a relationship with their child is, while you're waiting, become the person that your child wants to come home to. How does that feel?
Who do you want to be when they grow up? So you have, and exactly what you said earlier is, showed you what kind of person she was and how she's grown and what she, I mean, Jenny, you're here, tell us how you changed from when you last saw the girls to when Addie came back. Could you feel that you changed emotionally, that you had more to offer, that you were stronger?
Yes and no at certain times. I think I instinctively knew when to kind of take a step back, but still let them know I was there. In other words, subtle, you know, the phone calls or a text message. But yes, I mean, I was told a long time ago when I lost custody of them, you know, sit back and get strong and be ready when they come home to you, because there's going to be a lot of aftermath. I think that living by example, living in a good relationship, a nice home, changing my environment, I don't know, it was that type of thing. But I think for the most part for the girls, when I heard Grace say I knew my mom would always be there, there were talks that we had, not too frequently because they neither one of them at a time really cared to talk to me. But, you know, I got it in. I'll always be here for you. I'll always love you. Nothing's going to push you away.
This is Michelle talking. Whether or not how you felt about your experience with the legal system, I imagine that your parents were talking to you a little bit about what was going on. What did that feel like?
What did it feel like?
To know this lawyer said that, or...
Oh, it was completely overwhelming.
Because we have a lot of lawyers listening, and I think it's partly their responsibility to protect the children. And I don't think they know what the children go through when they're brought into the legal process.
Children should not be involved in the legal process, period. It's too much to worry about, and we shouldn't have to worry about anything that goes on between the parents and, like, within the court system and stuff. I know that my dad would present, at least he had tried to present, like, documents and stuff and try to prove things against my mom, and I just didn't want anything to do with it. I didn't want to hear any of that because it just puts me in the middle as a child, and it's like I feel this tugging force going back and forth between the two parents.
Totally unfair. It's really a tough thing to do to kids. Which one of you is a favorite? Who do you want to live with? You know, how can you like her if she did this? How can you like him? It's all bad stuff for kids. But you've survived quite well.
Grace, how do you feel about the conflict in court?
I agree with Addie. I really do. And I agree with Addie. And there was a lot of times like custody battles when I would try and talk to my dad about, you know, giving up custody of me so I could go live with my mom, because it's happened a lot, you know, because I mean I've talked about it with him a lot, you know, and then there's been a lot of times when I've decided I really want to live with my mom, but then he kind of like pulls me away from that. Everything legal, it's really hard to understand.
One of the things I think parents need to realize is one of the most harmful things in life for health is stress. So what they are doing when they do this is they're willfully stressing their children and putting them in a situation that can make them sick.
Right.
And have them trouble in school. And it is none of their business. It's the parents that are getting divorced, not the children. And I just wish they'd think of that.
And John, because you think parents would know that. And honestly, my experience and my observation is that they don't. And they will say to me, well, I just think my child should know the truth.
Yeah.
And which I always say, would you rather your child be happy or would you rather them know the truth as you see it? What's your choice? Let's say you're even right.
Well, and I
you
think
it's
pretty clear.
You want to destroy their happiness.
It's pretty clear what Addie and Grace just said. They don't want to know the truth. They just want to know that they can love both their parents, and they don't want to be involved in that two-person conflict, and they want to be left out of it. And I think that's absolutely the way it should
be.
Well,
you know what, Jill, one of the things that we always ask the experts, and I love to hear what they're saying, is do you feel like you're the targeted parent, the alienated parent, should defend the things that are said against them? Or should they just keep the child out of it? How does it feel when they start saying, that never happened and it's not true? How do you feel about that? I'm asking Addie or Grace. The experts and the psychologists that we talk to say to the alienated parent, you don't have to defend the allegations made against you. The kids don't want to be involved in that. And I'm asking you, how do you feel about somebody defending an untrue allegation? How does that feel for you? What do we tell parents to do, in your opinion?
Well, it's really hard for me personally to believe anything that my parents say. Like, if my dad would say something about my mom, and if my mom were to defend it, I wouldn't know who to believe, like, to be honest. So
That's right.
I would prefer that nothing bad is said about anyone, because that just makes the situation so much worse.
Is that no matter what it said, you feel like you're in the middle.
Yeah.
Well, Jill and Michelle are talking about the experts say, but unfortunately the experts are not being listened to because they're who's talking right now, Gracie and
yeah.
Addie, are the experts.
Yeah.
It's what somebody says in a book isn't the expert. That's what you read about somebody's case. Gracie, Addie, you're helping a bunch of people, I think.
They really are. They're doing a good job. We have a call that I'd like to take from the 812 area code. Welcome, and thank you for holding. Do you have a question for Addie and Grace?
Hi, Jill. This is Cindy Perry.
Hi, Cindy. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Well, I am doing terrifically. And, of course, you know Jenny. She's on the phone, and Addie and Grace are here, and Judge Michelle. What do you have to ask Addie and Grace tonight, Cindy?
Well, I have been following the conversation here this evening, and probably what I'd like to know most is because we are headed back to the courtroom, and how does that make the girls feel? And hi, Grace and Addie. I know we haven't met, but I have known your mother since February, and I know where you girls get your strength. I'm very impressed, and you inspire me. How did you feel when your parents, every time they went back to court? I know you were just talking about that, but would you say yes? You say don't give up, but would you say keep going if it means going back to the courtroom? How did that make you feel?
Grace can go ahead.
Okay, Grace.
You know, like we said earlier, well, like I said, I, you know, being involved in legal, like having it, you know, turned over and be legal, like legal matters, whatever, it really is stressful. It's really obnoxious to hear a parent approach you with, like, all these legal documents and, like, you want, you know, wanting them to talk to your lawyers and attorneys and stuff. It's, you know, it's annoying. And
did you experience that? I mean, because we are told that, you know, not to discuss this with our children, not to have them read the court documents and not to drag them into the middle. And we have a judge that does support that, but I continue to battle that, and I continue to battle parenting time issues and seeing my children even with a court order parenting coordinator.
I wouldn't really say there's anything wrong with asking the kid what they want, but you know, too much involvement with the court and all this stuff, it honestly really is overwhelming. But it's, you know, once you get your divorce, you know, it's over. It's like
good for you.
Right.
Yeah, if I was a kid in that situation, I'd say, what are you telling me about this? It's your problem, not mine.
Right.
But the reality is, once the parents get the divorce, sometimes it just starts to begin. And I think with the question, of course it's all terrible being in court. Of course it's a nightmare. But if you had to choose with one parent giving up, if their only recourse was to go to court, in the long run, wouldn't you want to see that parent that they keep trying, or is it not they should not keep trying because it's too stressful? I guess.
I think that if I guess it just really depends. If it was my mom in the case, just you know, in the end, giving up, you know, it. I don't know if I would honestly be like, wow, you know, she tried really hard and she gave up, you know, maybe, you know, there was something there that I missed and maybe I should go back to her or maybe I should just stay against her, you know. I honestly can't say, I don't know, but it's...
You're doing fine.
It's such a complicated thing. Things that Jill and I say is not to give up, and that is often going to mean the only recourse ever left to some of these parents is court.
We say one thing that both parents need to remember is that the attorneys do not make money unless they're working. And they'll make sure there's a lot of work out of whatever's going on. Keep that in mind.
And
thank God that you, Grace and Addie, did not have to go through this anymore, and that for some reason you came to the decision, whatever your mom did, she did right, whether it was calling every day and maintaining contact with you or trying to send you things. any of the things that she did seemed to work. And there are so many parents out there like me who have no contact with their children and want that so badly. And calling every day, if that's what it is, or trying to send something if you know where they are, is so incredibly important. And I think what we walk away with tonight is that you girls loved your mom, in this case your mom, sometimes it's a dad who's alienated, but in this case it's your mom, Jenny. You loved her regardless of what your father was saying about her. And it just took you time to break the hold of all of the things that were being told to you for you to step out of the box and make the connection back to your mom.
Right.
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 Okay.
Don't leave me hanging out here, guys.
Yeah, don't leave me hanging, girls. Come on.
No, you have to remember that these are much younger people than you, and they are processing
right, right, right.
what you're saying.
Yeah.
And you're talking from your thousands of words of experience and hours.
I'd have you girls back on. We are almost done, and this hour has flown by, and I think there's so many more parents that need to hear you and need to hear why and need to hear how and need to hear all of the things that you have to say. You are brave, young, articulate, intelligent girls, and I thank you both for being on. And Addie, happy, happy birthday, and thank you for spending it with us. Grace, you're brave. I wish you success in your career because I know you're going to be amazing. And I told you, if you make it, you have to do concerts for PAO and give back to us, you know. I'm going to hold you to that. And I wanted to tell you that tonight we have MSNBC, NBC, the BBC listening, Fox, CNN Chile, and, of course, we have John McCune with us, which is amazing.
That doesn't mean much. Right, Grace and Addie, may I say one last parting word to you?
Yes.
Just remember that your father and mother, at one point in their life, loved each other very much, and along came you guys.
Yep.
So, and you will love them, hopefully, the rest of your life, because you wouldn't be here with it unless they did.
Thank you guys all so much for being here, Michelle.
Thank you.
I
happy
know
birthday,
you
sweet
well.
Addie, and nice to meet you, Grace and
Thank
John.
You.
It's been wonderful. Thanks so much for staying with us.
Like I said to my mom, thanks for having me.
Thank you guys, and we'll do this again. Have a great night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.